Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to this week's edition of Wall Street Unspun, Euro Pacific Capital's midweek market update. This is Peter Schiff. I am the president of Euro Pacific Capital, and we're here to talk about the markets and about the dollar and about the U.S. economy and about what all that means to you. Anyway, this is again a call-in show, and I welcome your calls, your questions, your comments on any of the topics that I'm discussing or any questions that come to mind are related to your investments or the economy. Give me a call, the number toll-free to call is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. And so the lines are free, so call up with your questions. Anyway, the dollar's rally that we've been discussing has continued, I think, a little bit since our last week's program, but over the last couple of days, the dollar has started to give back some of its gains. But it's still rallied, I'd say, a good, if you measure it by the dollar index, off its lows, the dollar has managed about almost a 4% rally, 3, 4% rally, which is not insubstantial. I don't think the dollar is going to go much higher than this. I think it might have already seen its highs. It's hard to say. I think the key number will be on Friday, and we'll talk about the jobs numbers that are coming out on Friday a little bit later. Other than that, there's a chance that we might have already seen the high in this dollar move. You know, the dollar has been trading in a sideways pattern really since the first of the year. So for the last 3 months, the dollar has really gone nowhere. It's just been consolidating the rather substantial declines that it saw in 2004, 2003, and 2002. You know, we did have a similar sideways period in the dollar early last year, and ultimately the support gave way, and we moved down to new lows, and we're going sideways again. And I think, as I said before, this is a great opportunity, particularly for those of you who are listening to the program who maybe have not gotten rid of their dollars yet. You haven't taken my advice, and you haven't moved to divest yourself, to protect your wealth, and move out of dollars. And this small window of opportunity, this little bit of a bounce of the dollar, is just the opportunity that you need to sell into. Because I'm still convinced that the dollar is going to collapse. In fact, maybe one of the listeners of this program or somebody on my website emailed me an article, which I now have posted on my website. If you go to my website at www.europac.net, www.europac.net, you can see this article. It's on the top of my articles, and it says, Malaysia's Mantier predicts dollar fall. And in fact, he doesn't actually predict a fall. He really predicts a collapse. Here's how the article starts. It's from an AP story out of Kuala Lumpur. Former Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, whose economic management during the 1997-98 financial crisis won worldwide accolades, says the U.S. dollar is headed for a collapse and urged international business to trade in euros, news reports said Wednesday. Now, I mean, collapse, and he's not the only major figure. I mean, this guy was the prime minister of the country, and he should know about currency collapses because he was the prime minister during the Asian economic collapse, where the Malaysian ringgit, among other Asian currencies, got killed. And he can see the same situation with the United States. So, I mean, it's a very interesting article. There's some good comments in there. Again, you can read the whole article on my website. But the point is, this is a former president of this company or prime minister of this country saying the dollar is going to collapse, not just decline. And again, those are the same words I've reminded listeners of this program. Paul Volcker, who was the Federal Reserve Chairman before Alan Greenspan, says that he believes there's an 80% chance the dollar will collapse or crash, I think was his word. So you've got people saying collapse, you've got crash. That's why investors like Warren Buffett are not, you know, just sitting still. That's why they're moving tens of billions of dollars, or at least Warren Buffett has, out of U.S. dollar into the euro, into the New Zealand dollar and Australian dollar and Canadian dollar and, you know, other currencies for safety to preserve wealth. Because if the dollar is going to collapse, what that means is that all financial assets, dollar denominated, are also going to collapse, meaning their buying power, which means if you've got U.S. government bonds, if you've got money in CDs, if you've got bank accounts, that's going to collapse because that's all the U.S. dollar, and it's all going to collapse. So the thing is not to just sit there and wait for it to happen or hope that it doesn't happen. The key is to protect yourself now, to take action. To do what people like Warren Buffett and other sophisticated, you know, knowledgeable investors are doing, and what they're doing is they are taking their dollars and converting them into other assets before the collapse. They are using these dollars to accumulate real assets in other countries, and that's what, you know, I'm helping my clients do at Euro Pacific Capital. I'm helping people identify a conservative, dividend-producing stocks and bonds around the world in those countries where the currencies are going to rise as the dollar falls or are going to hold on to their value. And this is the only rational thing that you can do if you comprehend the gravity of the problem that we face. And I'm not talking about something that's going to happen, you know, way into the distant future. This is something that's going to happen relatively soon. I mean, it could happen within the next few months, certainly within the next year or two. I predict a major collapse. I mean, if Paul Volcker says 80% chance of a collapse in the next 5 years, that could easily be in the next 1 or 2 years. But even if it is 5 years away, 5 years is not a long time. You know, most people who are planning for a retirement are planning for a retirement that's going to take place way more than 5 years from now. If you're saving for your children's college education and they're now in elementary school, college is a lot more than 5 years away. And if the currency that you're saving is the U.S. dollar, and if Paul Volcker is right, and sometime in the next 5 years it collapses, what happens to your retirement fund? What happens to your college fund? You know, it's gone. You know, what difference does it make if you have a fund full of dollars if they don't buy anything? That's the key. Again, most people don't understand the difference between the dollars and what the dollar will buy. See, nobody wants dollars for the sake of having dollars. It's not like you want to hang them on your wall and admire, you know, how pretty they are. You want dollars because you know people will accept them in exchange for the goods and services that you really want. It's not the dollars that you want, but what they buy. And that's what's going to change. See, you might not lose any of your dollars if you keep them in the bank or a CD. What you're going to lose is what they're worth, because people aren't going to give you anything for them. That's what we talk about. We're talking about a currency collapsing or a currency crashing. It's the purchasing power. It's that people will no longer exchange for you goods and services at the same rate that they used to. And this is a huge, huge looming disaster out there, and people have to act. And, you know, what we've had in the last couple of weeks, the dollar's been bouncing around. It's an opportunity, because I'm telling you something, once we really break through this support, and you can look at it on the dollar index, it's a chart we like to look at. You can look at the chart on my website of the dollar index as well. But we've got this long-term support at around the 80-81 level on the dollar index, and I predict that that support is going to break. I think it's going to break relatively soon. What happens is every time we go down to that level, we get some speculators that come in and buy, and then it rallies a little bit. You know, but I just read an article on Bloomberg a couple days ago that shows that the bullishness among traders on the dollar is at almost a two-year high, that we now have a greater percentage of people who think the dollar is going to rally than at any time in the last 2 years. That's a very, very positive sentiment indicator for the dollar, which means it's very negative as a contrarian indicator. Also, if you look at the number of people who are bullish on the dollar, the number of dollar bulls among speculators right now, traders, currency traders, is more than 2-to-1 the number of dollar bears. So you've got an abundance of people who are bullish on the dollar, and you've got sentiment at near a two-year high. And I know I've read various things on the internet. You know, people like to point out, they think that there's an overwhelming sentiment that the dollar has to fall, that there's too many dollar bears. But that's just not true. The reality is there's never been more dollar bulls than over the last couple of years. There's an overwhelming amount of bulls. There is so much positive sentiment on the dollar right now. There's more positive sentiment than there's been in a couple of years. And where is that sentiment coming from? It's coming from speculators. They think they've got a free trade here. They think they can buy the dollar index down near 80, put in a tight stop, and get a big rally in the dollar. Well, it ain't going to work out. I think they're all going to get stopped out. It's too easy to just look at a support that even an 8-year-old, anybody with a chart, can take a look at that and say, oh, there's support down here. Let's buy it. It isn't going to work. I think about a lot of foolish speculators are going to take a gamble, and it's not going to pay off. Because I think the real long-term holders around the world are taking advantage of any dollar rally to sell. And that's why every time it goes down to support, you get a little bit of a rally. The speculators bid it up. Real flows of funds drive the dollar back down, goes back down to lows. Some speculators pick it up again. Ultimately, what's going to happen is as we keep crashing down the lows, the number of speculators willing to take a gamble on the dollar, eventually they're going to have all the speculative dollar positions that they want, and eventually we're going to run out of speculators. We're going to crack below the $80 level. All of a sudden, all these technicians who bought it for a low-risk trade are going to rush for the exits. Now, there's no more speculators to take the other side of the trade from the real market, and now all you have is sellers, and you get a huge drop down. And I think once this dollar support does break, I think it's going to fall rather quickly. So you don't want to wait for the dollar to break through support and be in a free fall before you do something about it. You want to take advantage of the foolish speculators who are gambling on a currency that is in effect doomed, who don't understand the fundamentals about the United States and about the dollar, and sell your dollars to them. You know, I would rather follow the advice of people, you know, like the former Prime Minister of Malaysia, you don't know, or like the former chairman of the Federal Reserve, or like the most successful investor in U.S. history, Warren Buffett. You know, they know what's going on, and they're doing something about it, and we're doing the same thing. And I'm trying to preserve wealth for as many clients as I possibly can. And I said before, the dangers are so great of a dollar collapse that it just doesn't make any sense to me to hold much long-term wealth in the dollar, because I just can't see any argument for the dollar to rise. Yet the downside risk is so dramatic in this currency right now, given what's happening with the fundamentals and given what's about to change. See, what's changing right now is interest rates are rising. They're rising slowly, but they're rising. And the problem is, our economy, and I mentioned this in great extent in the last program, is very dependent on these low interest rates because of all the adjustable rate mortgages out there and all the floating rate debt and all the lines of credit. And, you know, as rates go up, even if the Fed raises them a quarter at a time, you know, after a year or two, those quarter point increases are going to add up to real money. Real money that people who have adjustable rate mortgages won't be able to afford. And it's really going to crush the economy. And the federal government, hey, you know, I've mentioned before, the national debt is $7.5 trillion. A year from now, it'll be over $8 trillion. Well, what happens if a year from now, interest rates are 6%, right? 6% short-term rates. That wouldn't be that high, 6%. Well, how much is 6% of $8 trillion? Well, 6% of $8 trillion is over $500 billion. That would be the annual cost in interest alone on the national debt. Right now, we're only paying about $350 billion. But at 6%, we're at $500 billion, which means at 12%, what if rates went to 12%? Well, now the government has to pay $1 trillion a year in interest on the national debt. Is 12% unreasonable? Not at all. We got to 20% in 1980, and the economy was in much better shape then than it is now. We had far more savings in 1980 than we did now. We had far less debt. You know, so if anything, interest rates should be able to go a lot higher today than they did in 1980. But 12% alone is enough to mean the government's going to have to spend $1 trillion a year just on interest payments. So this is a huge disaster waiting to happen. And as I said, it's obvious to the Prime Minister of Malaysia. Now, look, other people in Asia are talking about this. Look what's happening in South Korea. Look what's happening in Japan. Look what's happening in China. There's all this talk about diversifying out of the dollar, about rebalancing their currency reserves. You know, the old expression, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's a huge problem brewing. And you've got to see that America's creditors, the ones loaning us all this money, are getting nervous. And they should be. And they realize that, you know, look I wrote about this and I talked about it on my program before with respect to the Social Security reforms. The Japanese and the Chinese should be getting real nervous about these Social Security reforms, because if they go through, that means that the U.S. budget deficit is going to go through the roof. Because what the government is planning on doing is taking Social Security tax money and letting people put it in the stock market, and then borrowing an extra couple hundred billion a year for the deficit, which means the Chinese and the Japanese are going to have to lend the money. Now, they don't want to do it. They already don't want to lend us the money they're lending us. But they realize that by creating the impression that they're these giant fools that are going to buy all the dollars because they've got to prop up the American consumer, if they allow this ridiculous theory to take hold in Washington, then what's going to put the check on American politicians? If they think they can run deficits forever as big as they want because the Japanese and the Chinese are going to fund them at low rates of interest because they can't afford to do anything else, then it's a huge moral hazard. And they got to be thinking, hey, look, we can't let this happen. We can't let the U.S. government just run these deficits. I think it's going to hit the fan this year. But I think Volcker's 80% probability, maybe it's 80% probability it will happen in the next 1 or 2 years, not the next 5 years. I would be surprised. I'd be very surprised if I'm doing this radio show 3 or 4 years from now and this hasn't already happened. I'd be very surprised. You know, I think by then, this is going to be history. It's not going to be my forecast for the future. It's going to be a history lesson. But anyway, again, let me give you the telephone number. Still, the lines are open for people to call, to comment about what I'm saying, to ask any questions. The telephone number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597. It's 888-678-9597. Last time, we got about maybe 6 or 7 calls in the last segment going into the close. And so I was running out of time, and I had to cut some people short. It's better to call earlier in the program. Don't everybody wait till the last 10 minutes and then call. So again, if you want to call, if you want to ask me a question or talk about anything, it's 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. I want to take a quick break and just play a segment, a message from Euro Pacific Capital. That's my company. It'll give you a little bit more information about who we are, how to get a hold of us, and you know what we're all about. So let's play that spot and pick up the program at the other side.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Welcome back. And you know, the last few days have been very volatile days in the market, and many of my favorite stocks, the stocks that I've been buying for clients for years, have dropped, pretty substantially in the last few days. I mean, 5, even 10% drops. And these are very conservative stocks, by the way. And they've taken some pretty big hits on no news. I mean, none of the stocks that we own have come out with any negative news at all. I mean, nothing bad has come out. Nothing has changed between today and last week. All that's happened, I think, is a lot of people who are in these stocks and who've been in them maybe for the right reasons, I think have gotten a little nervous in the last few days. with statements from the Fed about inflation and with the backup of interest rates and all this bullishness on the dollar and people thinking, oh, a stronger dollar is going to mean lower commodity prices. And so I think we've seen a lot of people nervously selling energy trusts and foreign bond funds and, you know, things of that nature. And I think it's created a hell of an opportunity, great buying opportunity, number one, for our current clients. I mean, anybody who's a client of Euro Pacific Capital who's listening to this program, great time to add to your account. A great time. You know, this is one of the first times in I don't know, 4 or 5 months that we've seen some of our stocks drop. I mean, our stocks have been rising steadily, and this is a great opportunity to add to positions across the board. I don't think these drops are gonna last very long. I think what happens is you get a rush of sellers right away in stocks that don't typically trade that often. I mean, they're bought by, you know, buy and hold long-term investors, and all of a sudden you get a group of sellers, and you know they go on sale. Some of them, I mean, some of it looks like margin-related selling. Maybe, you know, as the stocks start to go down, people have them on margin. Their cost of carrying margin is going up. Maybe some of the hedge funds have been in these stocks. So it looks like there's some forced selling and, you know, some real opportunities to take advantage of other people's situations or other people's foolishness to buy some great, great companies. And, you know, the cheaper we buy these companies, the bigger the dividends that we get. You know, so if the stock, let's say, was yielding 14% and all of a sudden it drops and now the same stock is yielding 16%, but nothing fundamentally has changed, it's just a much, much better time to buy. So, yeah, definitely, if you have an account with us now, give us a call. Talk to one of our brokers about adding to your account. And I think that this is a short window. The window might even shut on Friday, depending on what happens with the jobs data. And certainly, if you don't have an account with us, if you've been listening to this program for the last 4 or 5 months, and you thought about doing something, obviously these stocks are a lot higher than they were 4 or 5 months ago, certainly, but they're lower than they were a month ago. You know, in the last 2 or 3 days, some of these stocks have lost the last month of gains. I don't think it's going to be permanent. I think we're going to continue the uptrend because I don't think anything has changed. But this is a window of opportunity for you to pick up some of these shares and to get rid of your dollars now, you know, off the lows. I mean, the dollar, you know, has bounced, as I said, 4% off its lows, and some of our stocks are down 10% or more from their highs of just last week, because pretty much all of our stocks made new 52-week highs in the last week or two. And so they just pulled back. But as I said, it's a great, I think, window of opportunity for people to establish positions who have been listening to me but haven't done anything yet. Anyway, I know we've got a call on the line. John's calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was thinking about all these companies that are moving to China, and isn't it a fact, I'm not sure, don't the Chinese own 51% of them when they move over there?
What do you mean, the Chinese government or the Chinese people?
The Chinese government, the Chinese people, in order to invest in China, you got to give them 51% ownership.
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the rules are with respect to foreign ownership, but it wouldn't be us giving them ownership. If they already own the company, what would happen is there could be some rules that prevent Chinese publicly traded companies or something from selling more than a 49% ownership to non-Chinese. I mean, that could be the case. I'm not sure what the rules are, but sometimes countries do impose limits on foreign ownership. Normally, it's not on all companies, but it's on maybe strategic companies like, you know, utilities or, you know, railroads or airlines or something that they think is, you know, is maybe monopolistic in nature. But, you know, I'm not exactly sure. You know, I know that's not the case in Hong Kong. I mean, the stocks that are traded in Hong Kong, that we buy a lot of those, there are no restrictions. I mean, foreigners can buy as many shares as domestic citizens want to sell them. But that might not be the case in mainland China. I'm not positive.
I was thinking like these big companies like General Motors or any of the bigger companies, they'll move a factory over there and start making car parts or cars or something. And I was under the understanding.
Own the factory. That doesn't, you know, I don't think so. I think if General Motors wants to open up a factory in China, then General Motors owns that factory. I don't think that the Chinese government requires that General Motors cut them in for 51%. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
They were building Jeeps over there, and then all of a sudden, you know, for American companies, and then now the Chinese are building the Jeeps themselves and selling them.
But you know, the thing is, I mean, even if you were, I mean, look, I own a business in the United States, And the U.S. government, between the federal government and the state governments, I mean, they're taking half my profits in taxes. So they might as well own half of it if they're taking half the profits.
Well, yeah, you don't own it here anyway, but you got control more or less.
Yeah, I think the taxes, I know the taxes are a lot lower in China than they are here. So I bet if General Motors owns a plant in China, that they own more of that plant than they own of their plants in America, where the U.S. government is taxing the hell out of them. So they probably have more ownership over there on their assets than they do over here. But anyway, do you have an account with us yet?
No.
Yeah, well, you ought to open one up. Do you have any savings that you could protect?
Well, I got a little bit.
Yeah, well, call us up. You know, it's 800-727-7922. You know, there's brokers there. Open up an account and let us show you how you can get good income by investing in foreign assets.
All right, I'll have to check that out down the line then.
All right, John. Well, hey, thanks for the call, and tell your friends to tune into the program.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, I'm not exactly familiar with all the rules down there, but as I've mentioned before, you know, it seems to me that there's got to be a lot more freedom in China, in communist China, than there is in the United States. And it's a sad reflection on the United States, but that's got to be the case. Because look at all the things that the Chinese produce, right? If they were really a communist country, they wouldn't produce any of that stuff. Communists can't produce anything. Think back to the former Soviet Union. Were there any products on the shelves made in Russia? Now, the only thing that Russia made was caviar, vodka, and fur, because it just was natural. I mean, all they could do is harvest their resources to some extent, but they couldn't make anything in Russia. They didn't have any factories in Russia that made anything. I mean, nothing that was worth buying. Because they were slaves. I mean, it was a communist country. China is so productive because they're free. They have to be free, otherwise they wouldn't produce. And think of all the money we borrow from the Chinese, right? The Chinese are one of, you know, they're lending us, you know, so much money. Did we ever borrow money from Russia? No. We used to lend Russia money. We used to have to give them food. They couldn't even feed themselves in the Russia, Soviet Russia. You know, the breadbasket, the Ukraine was the breadbasket of Europe. But when the communists ran it, they couldn't even feed themselves because there was no freedom. And China is full of freedom. That's why they're so productive. That's why they're lending us so much money. And the fact is, they're freer than us, because if we were freer than them, then we would be producing all our stuff and lending them money. But in any event, hopefully one of these days we can regain some of our freedom that we've lost. Hopefully we can regain that freedom as Americans at some point in the aftermath of this major, major economic crisis that is on our doorstep. Because a lot of countries, I mean, out of adversity, sometimes, you know, you can step forward. I mean, a lot of times in countries where you have a grave economic distress, there's reform. It's a catalyst for reform. Hopefully, the reform that we make in America will be to recognize that the mess that we're in is because of government meddling in the economy through the Federal Reserve and through the government, with monetary policy, inflationary monetary policy, and excessive taxation and excessive regulation that undermined our economy. And maybe we can see the solution to our problems as a dismantling of the welfare state and the tax and spenders in Washington and a return to sound money. And it's not going to be a panacea, right? We're not going to all of a sudden go, you know, solve our problems overnight. But by eliminating government and all the government spending, we eliminate the roadblocks that would enable the free market to, over time, correct, and enabling America to, over time, rebuild a viable industrial economy. We did it in the past. We can certainly do it again. But we can't do it with all the government that we have. Unfortunately, if we don't get a major overhaul and dismantling of our government, we're never going to get out of this mess. Right? This is going to be a permanent malaise, like the 1930s type depression, only worse, if we can't succeed in dramatically limiting the size of government. And in fact, sometimes when countries go through economic crises such as what we're about to go through, they go the other way. You get more government. You get, you know, something like what happened in Weimar Republic, Germany. After they had their hyperinflation, that gave rise to the Nazi Party. Remember, Adolf Hitler was elected democratically. It was the National Socialist Party, which he headed, and he was elected, voted in the office democratically in the aftermath of the hyperinflation in Germany. I mean, so sometimes you go in one extreme and sometimes you go in the other. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen here in the United States. I certainly hope we don't go down that road, the road that the Germans went down. But, you know, I hope we go down. You know, New Zealand, I talked about the example of New Zealand. We invest a lot of money for clients in New Zealand. We have been investing in New Zealand for a number of years. New Zealand went through their own version of what we're about to go through back in the 1980s. They had too much government. They borrowed too much. And they had a big recession, depression there. You know, their stock market collapsed. I mean, everything, you know. But they did the right thing. They rid of the government programs and a lot of socialism. And they, you know, they're in great shape today because of it. And hopefully we can follow that New Zealand example. I mean, I'd be thrilled. I'd be thrilled to death if that's what ultimately happened. But the key right now is to preserve our wealth. That's the key. We've got to get our money out of U.S. dollars now, get it into these foreign assets, so that hopefully, if we do make the right reforms in the future, we can bring the money back to the United States and help rebuild it. Now, if they never institute the right reforms, then we're going to have to leave it where it is. We're not going to want to bring it back to dollars unless we can see light at the end of the tunnel. And fortunately, when we see light at the end of the tunnel, very few people will. And they won't have the means anyway. I mean, that's going to be the beauty of bringing our money back. Because things are going to be so bad in this country at the bottom, right? When the stock market has bottomed out and the real estate market has bottomed out, most people aren't going to think it's the bottom. It's going to look real ugly. And there's going to be very few people around that have any money anyway to invest. So, you know, our clients who have their money safely in good dividend-paying conservative foreign assets are going to be among the very few Americans who are going to be in a position to take advantage of all these bargains. Not just bargains in the stock market, but bargains in the residential real estate market, bargains in U.S. fixed income. You know, I mean, think about it. You know, in 1980, right, when interest rates were at 20%, right, when you could buy 20%, you could buy long-term government bonds were paying like 16%. Do you think there were a lot of people around that had money to buy those bonds? No. If a lot of people had money to buy those bonds, the interest rates wouldn't have been 16%. The reality was very few people had extra money to buy them at 16% because they already owned them when they were paying 4 or 5%. And the bond prices collapsed, or they were in stocks that collapsed. They didn't have the money. The people that had the money were the people who escaped the carnage in the first place, the people that had the sense to sell. They were the ones that had the money to buy in when no one else could do it, or no one else was thinking clearly because they were so shell-shocked from how much they had lost in the years leading up to it. So if you can get your money now safely into foreign assets when the U.S. is really on sale, when you can get those really high interest rates and you can buy U.S. stocks at 6 and 7 times earnings, when the Dow Jones might have an 8 or 9% dividend yield, you know, when there's real value there, you'll be able to buy. And one of the reasons there'll be so much value is because there's going to be an overwhelming supply of sellers with a minimal number of buyers. So the buyers will have the upper hand because there'll be so few of us that can buy. But the way to do that is to act now. You've got to make sure you don't go broke first so that you're in a position to pick up the pieces. And that means preserving your real purchasing power, not just preserving the nominal quantity of dollars in your possession. Anyway, we got some more economic news that came out today. We came out with our final revised version of the GDP figures for the fourth quarter of last year. And, you know, Wall Street was a little optimistic. They were expecting the revision to move the fourth quarter up to 4%. They left it unrevised at 3.8%. I think it's all downhill from there. You know, I think that you're going to continue to see the GDP numbers coming in lower. I think that 3.8%, I don't think we're going to have one quarter of this year that has a GDP growth as high as 3.8%. And why do I say that? Well, rates are moving higher, right? And the higher rates go, the more that's going to eat into our GDP, plus our trade deficit is getting bigger and bigger, and of course the trade deficit subtracts from that. And so I think we're headed downhill. I don't think we're going to be technically in a recession this year, although I think next year we could be in negative GDP. But I certainly think that this year we're going to have declining real GDP. Because, see, the government adjusts the GDP for inflation. So if the government says inflation is 1% or 1.5%, and they can say, well, growth is 3.8%. But what if the government's lying about inflation, which I believe they are, and instead of inflation being 1.5%, it's 5 or 6%? Well, that means GDP is actually falling, or GDP is actually falling, real GDP. The government's just pretending it's growing because they're lying about what the inflation really is. So all that we're really having is nominal growth, not real growth. I think we're probably already there because I think inflation is way, way beyond what the government is admitting to. And certainly, you know, again, when they talk about inflation, they're only talking about these core measures of inflation, which exclude everything that everybody buys, like food, energy, and houses. You know, so the core CPI is just is not really relevant to anybody, but the government likes to use it because A, it's easy to manipulate because there's so much hedonic adjustments, and because there are a lot of things in there that actually do fall in price, like consumer electronics and computers. But these are not objects that people buy on a weekly or daily basis, the way they buy food and energy and things of that nature. So, in any event, that number came out today, and no real reaction in the market. I think everybody is waiting for the bigger numbers to come out on Friday, which is the payroll numbers. And I think what the forecast is for the creation of 220,000 new jobs. And, you know, if I were to bet on whether it would be higher than that or lower than that, I'd bet lower. And it's been consistently lower. I think maybe out of the last, 10 times we've had these numbers, maybe once or twice it's been higher than the forecast, and all the other times it's been lower. I tend to think that Wall Street is always overly optimistic on how many jobs that they think the economy is going to create. Now, again, some of that is self-serving, but I mean they've just constantly been over-guessing. So I would say that the market is likely to be disappointed once again that we don't create quite as many jobs as they're looking. But again, the big problem with the jobs that we create and that we've been creating is that they're not producing products. The jobs that we've been creating are predominantly in the service sector. And we don't need more people in the service sector. We need people producing stuff. We need stuff that we can export so that we can pay down our trade deficit. That's the problem. See, people in the service sector, it's very difficult to export services. I mean, it's not impossible. There are some services that we can export. But by and large, most of them can't be. And so having more people in the service sector, all that does is create more demand for imports because these people who are getting jobs in the service sector are going to want to spend their salaries the same way everybody else spends their salaries. They're going to want to buy products. Problem is, no one's making them. No one in America anyway. So they have to go to China and the rest of the world and buy them. And it just runs up the trade deficit. So, you know, the fact that we're adding to the jobs base is not a good sign for America. Wall Street hasn't, caught on to that yet. You know, there's still a big disconnect on Wall Street, and for most people in America too, about America, about economics. You know, I put an article, a commentary on my website, and I've talked about this in the past, but I would really encourage people to go to my website and read this particular commentary that's up there right now. I posted it on March 28th, so it's brand new, and it's entitled "Even Stephen Roach Has It Wrong." And you should definitely read that, and also read some of the other articles that it references. And the website, again, the web address is www.europac.net. www.europac.net. And you can read all my economic commentaries on that website, but I'm calling your attention specifically to the one I just wrote, "Even Stephen Roach Has It Wrong." And Stephen Roach, of course, is the economist at Morgan Stanley. And Stephen Roach is probably the only guy on a major Wall Street firm who's basically telling it like it is, you know, to a degree. There might be other people on Wall Street that have the same feelings as Stephen Roach, but they're not as vocal. You know, they're certainly not as high profile. And I'm saying even he has this one wrong because he's a guy who generally has it right. And here's just one of the areas where I disagree with Roach. And he makes the same mistake that a lot of people make. And that is that he thinks that, you know, he looks at the world economy as a codependency, that America is dependent on Asia to produce the products and to lend them money. And Asia is dependent on America to consume their products and borrow their money. And, you know, I don't see this as a codependency. I see it as like a parasite and a host. I don't see the benefit that the Chinese get from lending us money that we could never repay, and from and producing products and just letting us have them. I mean, what people think is benefits them is that we give them dollars in exchange for their products. Well, so what? What good are those dollars? They can't do anything with them. All they can do is give them to their central bank, who prints up renminbi and gives them to the Chinese. I mean, think about this. Think about, what if a factory in China did this? Let's say there was a Chinese toy factory, and they made a bunch of toys. And at the end of the day, let's say they counted up the value of these toys, and they decided that it was worth a million renminbi. So the toy manufacturer put all these toys on a dump truck and dumped them into the Pacific Ocean, right? Let them sink to the bottom. And then they go to the central bank of China, and they say, okay, print me up a million renminbis for the toys I just dumped in the Pacific Ocean. And the Bank of China did that. All right, so the Chinese store manufacturer, he got his million renminbis. And he dumped all of his toys in the Pacific, in the ocean. Right? Now, here's what they're doing today. Instead of dumping them in the ocean, they put them on a ship and send them to America. We give them dollars. Now, the Chinese toy manufacturer goes to the Chinese government and says, here's my dollars, give me my million renminbi, because I don't need these dollars. So all that we've done is, instead of dumping them in the ocean, we've sent them over to the United States. But what do they need? Why don't they just cut out the middleman? Why don't they just go directly to the Bank of China? In fact, why even bother producing the toys to begin with if they're just going to dump them in the ocean? Why doesn't the toy manufacturer just tell the government at the Bank of China, look, why should we waste our resources producing these toys? Why should we bother to have our employees show up? Why don't you just give us, print up the million renminbi, and we'll pay all our workers their wages, we'll take our profits, but none of us will have to work. We'll just spend a day at the beach. It makes, that's all they have to do, right? Because they're not getting anything for their toys when they ship them to America and we pay them dollars that they can't do anything with but give them to their own government, who just puts them away in a vault where they can never use them and prints more money, right? It's all inflation. So they're going to realize that this is nonsense, that we're just benefiting, right? America is just benefiting right now. In the short run, we're benefiting because we get everything for free. We get all the products that these people in China or people in other parts of the world, we get all the products that they produce at no cost. They have to take the land, the labor, and capital. They have to use the resources to produce this stuff, and we get to enjoy it. Now, in the long run, of course, this is going to be a big disaster for America. And I think, one of the best examples I can think of is, I want to take a quick break, and then I'm going to finish this thought. Again, the telephone number for you to call, the lines are open. I'd like to get more of your calls. Again, we're coming into the last segment here. But the telephone number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Please call. We'll take a break and play that message again from Euro Pacific Capital, and we'll pick it back for the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. That was the last segment. Anyway, the phone number again for callers to call is 888-678-9597. Now, what I was thinking of, what that reminds me of the United States position is, suppose there's a group of people on an island, and they all fish for a living, and they fish every day, and at the end of the day, they eat their fish. Let's say, a charity decides or someone decides that they're just going to start giving them fish for free for a while, and they start giving them fish, and every day they get free fish. And let's say enough time goes by, maybe this goes on for a generation or so. Maybe all the people who knew how to fish pass away, and they never taught their children how to fish because why'd they need to know how to fish? Because they were getting fish for free every day. And all of a sudden, the free fish stop for whatever reason. Sure, for a long time, they got to enjoy fish without fishing. They got to eat without having to spend a day, with a hook and a line or a net. But all of a sudden, the free fish stop for whatever reason, and all of a sudden, they've got to fish for themselves. But the problem is, no one knows how to do it anymore. Maybe they don't have any more fishing rods or any tackle or any nets. So what do they think? Maybe they starve to death once they stop getting the free fish. So we used to have a vibrant industrial economy with all kinds of factories producing all sorts of goods that we consumed. Now we have all these goods coming to us from foreign factories, and we don't have any factories that can produce them anymore, and we don't have any people that even know how to do it. And if all of a sudden foreigners don't want our paper dollars for their manufactured goods anymore, what are we going to do? We can't manufacture them ourselves. So it's going to be a real tough transition back to economic reality. Anyway, we've got Dave on the line from Ohio. Go ahead, Dave.
Yes, I'm really concerned about these excessively high fuel prices, and the government can't seem to do anything to bring them down. I'm worried that could wreck our economy, too, if they don't do something. What do you feel about that?
Can't do anything to bring it down. The government doesn't have any fuel. The government's not in the business of exploring for or drilling for oil. I mean, certainly they have some oil in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that they could sell, but that would be foolish. But no, oil prices are going a lot higher. And it's not really that oil prices are going up. It's that the dollar is going down. See, that's the problem.
Oh, I see.
As the government debases the dollar, see, we have to import a lot of that oil.
Yes.
So if we're going to make the dollar worth less, then OPEC countries or any non-OPEC country who's exporting oil is not going to want to sell their oil for the same quantity of dollars that have less value.
Mm-hmm.
But the dollar loses, let's say if the dollar loses half its value from here, and right now oil is $50 a barrel, it's a little higher, but say 50, the dollar loses half its value, oil's going to go to 100.
Wow.
Because they're going to have to sell us, they're going to say, look, the dollar's worth half as much, we need twice as many of them. That's the bottom line. And I think that you could easily see the U.S. dollar losing half its value over the next couple of years, which would mean oil prices would double in terms of dollars on a currency adjustment alone. Which means if you think $2 gasoline is expensive, where do you see $4 gasoline?
So I'm riding my bicycle.
I think all these prices are going up, which is why I'm suggesting that my clients don't wait around like a lamb to get slaughtered. Get out of the dollar now. Get your money into these foreign assets. Own some of these oil and gas trusts so that when the price of oil goes up, it doesn't cost you money. You make money.
Mm-hmm.
I tell that to my clients all the time. Don't get mad. Get in on it. You know, I've got so much of my own money in oil and gas trusts that when I go to the pump, the higher I pay, the more I like it. Because I get so much dividend income every month that's dependent on the price of gas. You know, I look at my heating bills now that I moved here to the East Coast and my electric bills, and the higher they are, the more I like it because I'm making the other side of it. I'm getting paid more on my oil and gas investments than it costs me to drive my car and heat my house. But you just got to put yourself in that position where you're a net receiver of oil and gas revenue than you are a payer or a consumer of oil and gas. So that the higher the prices go, the better off you are, not the worse you are.
Yeah, it's definitely not good for the economy, though.
It's not good for the economy. But, I mean, it's good for you individually. Oh, certainly, yeah. I mean, the economy is in trouble. America as a nation is in trouble. The American people are in trouble. You know, just like any family would be in trouble that ran up a lot of debts on their credit cards and raided their retirement funds to have a big party. You know, I mean, we are in trouble. We indulged ourselves. We sacrificed our futures to have a party. And, it's not pretty. And there's nothing I can do to change that. You know, I can't save the whole country. I can only save a few people that are smart enough to think for themselves and to preserve their wealth. And hopefully I can save enough people that at least there will be a good group of people to help rebuild the country, because that's what we're going to need. We're going to need people to provide the savings to finance the building of the factories that we're going to have to build to replace all the products that we can't get foreigners to sell us anymore. We have to start making them ourselves again. And we're going to need capital. And my clients are going to be in a position that they can supply that capital. of course, at a good rate of return for them. I mean, we're not charitable institutions here, but you know, it's everybody will benefit. It's going to be the invisible hand and Adam Smith, and we'll be making investments, and the people will be benefiting from them as we enrich ourselves. You have an account with us yet?
Huh?
Well, call up 800-727-7922. I'm sure there's brokers in the California office that are still there that could take your calls. 800-727-7922. Talk to them and, start moving to preserve your wealth while you still have that opportunity.
Yeah, I really enjoy the show, though. Thanks again.
Yeah, keep listening. And again, I'm not talking simply to be entertaining, and although if you find the show entertaining, that's great, but there's a real purpose to this program. I mean, it's a purpose. I want to spend the time weekly with my clients who happen to tune in, and certainly I'm hoping more and more clients tune into the show, either on shortwave or on the internet, so I can communicate with everybody, in mass, and people can certainly ask questions. I mean, any clients who have a question, ask it on the air. I'm not, trying to hide anything from anybody. I like to keep things out in the open. That's very rare on Wall Street. As I said before, I would be surprised if any broker in the United States would have a live, unscripted, unscreened call-in program for all of their clients to call in and relate experiences. I just don't think other brokerage firms would be able to do it because they'd be inundated with complaints from people who they had lost money for. But in any event, I have it for that reason, but most importantly, to reach out to a broader audience who might not be aware of me, to try to educate the listeners about the real risks. Because Wall Street and the government are not going to tell you about these risks. You've got to figure them out for yourself. You've got to listen to other voices like mine who are telling it like it is and who are telling the truth. We're in the minority, but there are there are a few of us out there, and there's some very high-profile people who have caught on to this and who have taken action, but we're still in the minority. But this is the most important financial decision that you can make, right? I mean, people spend a lifetime, accumulating savings. And if I'm right, people are going to watch a lifetime's worth of savings evaporate in the blink of an eye almost. People's retirement plans are just going to be just taken away from them, in a split second. People who believe they have fortunes, I mean, people who have, multi-million dollar savings accounts for their retirement, where those millions today represent real wealth, they represent real purchasing power. In a few short years or less, it might not represent very much of anything at all. I mean, somebody who has millions of dollars could be in the same position as a homeless person on the street. That homeless person might have millions of dollars in their pocket too, because that might be how much they got, begging with a cup. You don't know. I mean, maybe the government decides to make that the smallest denomination of bills is a million. I don't know. I mean, we get hyperinflation, so there's a lot of risks out there. And even if we don't get a worst case scenario, even if the dollar still manages to hold on to half its value or a third of its value, that means that people holding dollars still lose half their wealth, or two-thirds of their wealth, or three-quarters of their wealth. Who wants to watch two-thirds of their wealth evaporate? Can you live on two-thirds of your wealth and retirement? If you can't, then you've got a problem. You've got to do something about it, and the only solution that I've been able to find is the one that we're proposing, which is to create a diversified portfolio of the highest quality assets around the world, dividend-paying, relatively conservative stocks and bonds in the countries that are debasing their currencies the least. Instead of investing in the world's biggest debtor, which America is, you invest in the world's biggest creditors. Instead of investing in the country that's running huge deficits, invest in the countries that are running huge surpluses. After all, America, right, when it was a good investment, if you would have invested in America in the 1930s or 1940s or 1950s or 1960s, right? You would have been investing in a country that was the world's largest creditor nation, that had the biggest trade surpluses, that had, that was lending money to the world. We had a high savings. You would have been investing in a country completely opposite of the one that you're investing in today, if you're investing in America. If you want to invest in the America of the future, you can't invest in this America. You got to invest out of the United States. because we possess all the qualities of the countries that are in decline, countries that had problems. We possess none of the qualities that America possessed a couple of generations ago, none of them. We're the mirror image of what America was. We're the opposite. The only thing is, there's still the mystique, the reputation, right? America, it's like we're like a bully, where people still think that we're tough, and no one wants to pick a fight because they know how tough we used to be. But if anybody took a poke at us, you know, maybe we'd go down because we're not what we used to be. And I think that more and more people around the world are starting to realize that America is not what it used to be, that it's just a paper tiger, and somebody's going to blow. And when they do, you know, we're going to fall over. So, and I, as I said, I don't think that's too far off, especially given the article that I pointed out today about the ex-prime minister of Malaysia talking about the dollar collapsing. I mean, if he can figure it out, all the people can figure it out. And I'm sure that the former prime minister making a statement in Malaysia is not, you know, doesn't mean much in America. But basically, that would be something like, Bill Clinton coming out, the former president, and making a major pronouncement, an economic pronouncement. I bet it would be pretty big news here in America. So if their former prime minister is saying this, and there's a couple hundred million people in Malaysia, they might think he has some credibility. And I'm sure they're listening to it in Thailand and Indonesia and other countries that are loaded up with dollars. Right? The word is getting out, and it's going to spread. And it's going to spread more rapidly now than it might have in other periods of time where we didn't have the telecommunications that we have, we didn't have the Internet. You know, it's so much harder to fool people today. You know, once the truth starts to get out, you know, it can really start to travel. So, you know, that's going to diminish the time that I have to spread this this word to the American people to get them to understand how high these stakes are and how important it is for yourselves, for your families, for your futures, that you not just stand idly by and allow this to happen, that you do something to preserve whatever financial assets you've accumulated. You just do not leave them there. I mean, leaving them in the dollar, it'd be like if you know there's a cat burglar loose in your house, in your neighborhood. He's already hit a couple of houses on the street. That'd be like leaving your windows open, your lights on, and all your jewelry, you know, on your bureau, and then driving off and, you know, and making a bunch of noise and just let them know that you're not there. You don't want to just sit there and wait to get your pocket picked, wait to get robbed. Do something before it's too late. Get rid of your dollars and accumulate a portfolio. And that's what you can do at Euro Pacific Capital. Give us a call. The telephone number to call toll-free is 800-727-7922. That's 800-727-7922. There are brokers in the office. If you don't call tonight, you can call, you know, anytime. And then talk individually. Of course, you know, everybody's situation is going to be slightly different. The investments that we might determine to be appropriate for one person, you know, we might have a different recommendation for somebody else with different circumstances. That's why we have individual brokers at Euro Pacific Capital to talk to you one by one, to really, you know, walk you through this strategy. And, you know, so give us a call. I think that's the most important thing that you can do. And I'm hoping that's what we get out of these broadcasts, is we convince more people that not only that we're right, but to actually do something about it. In any event, we're coming near the last minute of the program. I want to thank everybody once again for tuning in. Remember that, if you're new to this program, if you just started listening, I've been doing it now for, about 4 months, 5 months. All of the broadcasts that I've done so far are on my website. You can go there at www.europac, E-U-R-O-P-A-C, and listen to them on demand. And we do the program every week at the same time, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So until next week, this is Peter Schiff, the president of Euro Pacific Capital. Give us a call, 800-727-7922. Visit us online at www.europac.net. And tell your friends. Speak to you again next week. So long, folks.